This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios,
here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Welcome into another edition of Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing. I almost combined our names, Mike. Mike and Matt together. Sorry. Welcome into the program, guys. Mike, how are you?
I am awesome. It's been pretty good. The weather's been a little dreary, but you know, good turkey day. We had a good one.
Very cool. Yeah, Thanksgiving holiday. Hopefully everybody had a wonderful meal and you're waking up from your turkey coma. But a lot of good things to come on the program today. We're going to talk a little bit about GM upping their EV spending. We got some recall news with that airbag that we've been talking about. I don't know, Mike, for like 2 years we've been talking about Takata airbags.
Like four or five, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while. Reviews are going to be fun. I had a Volkswagen Golf GTI 6-speed that was incredibly fun to drive. One of the more fun weeks I've had whipping around.
Yeah.
Not to say it would be great for my family because I got a family, but if you're somebody who likes to drive quick little cars, man, it was fun.
Yes, I had the Nissan Rogue, the new Rogue. They redesigned it. It was a really fun. I thought the Rogue was pretty good. I think one of the best Nissans they make. This one's dramatically better.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
And it looks even better. So, you know.
They have the Rogue and the Rogue Sport, and I noticed that it feels like the Rogue is much bigger than the Sport.
The Rogue seems to be bigger than the Sport, and that's I'm on the Rogue, not the Sport. But it was a nice vehicle, and this is Nissan's big daddy seller.
Yeah,
it goes up against the CR-V and the RAV4 and stuff like that, and it's a nice. They've done a good job on it. They really have.
Very cool. So we've got reviews for that, and then we got a conversation coming up. Did you talk racing today, Mike?
Speedway Motors is a company that sells off-road parts, and they sell classic car vehicles. We're going to talk about my 58 F-100 that I'm working on, kind of upgraded. And they also have Circle Track racing parts, and it's hot rod stuff too. So if you got building any of these classic cars or hot rods or off-roads, this is a company that has quality parts and somebody that you can call and say, this is what I'm trying to achieve, and they'll help you through it. With the right kind of parts.
So Zach Raditz from Speedway Motors. Mike had a conversation with him. So we've got all that coming up. And then obviously with the podcast, you got the extra audio with our friends from Classic.com. You guys can go check out Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts, you can get Let's Talk Wheels. We've got a lot to come. Don't move. We have our news and notes segment coming up next, then automotive reviews. It's all on this week's edition of Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
It's time for our news and notes segment here on Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. All right, Mike, so we got a bunch of things to talk about here in our news and notes segment. Let's start with the EV world because, look, I feel like we're talking about electric cars every week. But what's interesting about this space right now is every week there's another announcement about a bigger and bigger commitment to electric vehicles and where we see the industry going. How fast? Are we going too fast? Or are we going fast enough or not fast enough?
Well, I don't know. But GM is putting in $27 billion with a B. And that 40% of its lineup is going to be electric by 2025. Well, the big deal is GM has designed – they're retooling all these plants. They're going to spend $2 billion alone to renovate its assembly plant in Spring Hill, Tennessee for the EVs. And they're going to – what's really crazy is they have this new technology called Ultium, which is kind of a cool name. And the maximum range of its proprietary Ultium batteries is 450 miles.
Okay. Wow.
And even though you're saying, okay, that's 450 miles without AC on, without heater on, without driving like an old –
Look, 300-mile range is still –
If it's legit 300,
that's great.
A legit 300 is awesome.
Yeah.
And they also charge faster. So this new platform, they're busting their tails to get this thing out because this thing is going to – GM has kind of been, they haven't really done a lot over the last few years. You know, they used to be like, remember GM was like a juggernaut. You know, everybody else before it. Now Toyota and Volkswagen are now the juggernauts. Well, now I think GM is kind of ahead on a lot of stuff. But this new platform, they're already working with Honda, wants to be on it. So all these other companies are going, hey, buddy, let's partner with you, you know. And it says it's open to partnership. They're making it. So they've already worked something with Honda. And there's a couple little of these startups that are one that may go into them because this new technology is really freaking cool.
Well, Mike, the thing that kind of – not buried in this story, but it's down a little ways in this story that kind of jumped at me is that GM is going to move up the production time for the Hummer. So we talked about this. The Hummer is over $100,000. They were marketing like crazy, and you were talking about the fact that it was already sold out and it wasn't actually out yet. Well, now I guess because of supply and demand, right? If they're like, wait, everybody wants this thing. Let's get this thing out as fast as possible, right?
Right, right. And what they're also going to bump the Chevy pickup electric truck 11 months sooner than planned. Okay, they're going to book a compact crossover by 21 months and a second electric GMC pickup in 40 months from now. But they've also got...
Have you driven an electric truck yet?
No.
I haven't either.
I know.
I'm going to be so interested to...
Well, they've done it.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a Toyota 4Runner right now that you know, my review will be a Volkswagen, but I've got a 4Runner that's the off-road capable. Like, I'm going to go tool around. And so I'm going to spend some of my weekend in the desert, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
And just having some fun off-roading because I've got the days off. So, but I every time I do it, in the back of my head, I keep on saying, if this thing was electric...
Yeah.
How would I feel?
Yeah, you're right.
And I can't wait to try it because I'll be taking myself and probably have a big thing of water with me when I do it just in case. But I really want to see how I feel and what it feels like to be in a truck off-roading in the middle of nowhere with an electric vehicle and how do I feel about it because I can't wait to find out because hopefully it's nothing. Hopefully I don't even notice it because if so, I mean, I think people are going to gravitate towards these things because of the torque and what you can do with it.
Well, also GM is launching something called Ultify. Which is newer, their new customer experience program combines the purchase, the onboarding, and the ownership experience all in one platform. So you simplify the shopping experience for EV buyers, clear pricing, online vehicle presentation. So basically you find all about your EV online, you price it out online, which means it's going to be rock bottom prices, okay? Because that's the deal. When people see prices online of a vehicle, I don't care what dealer it is, oh, this is our internet price. That's as low as they'll go.
Right.
Okay. So if you show up in person, you can't say, well, this internet price is $38,000. I'll give you $36,000. They're going, no, it's $38,000. It's as low as we can go, period.
Right. Yep.
And this thing is going to be cool because basically you're just going to show up to the dealership and drive the vehicle and say, yeah, I really like it. I'll take it. And I've already applied for loans. I've already got this. I've already got that. It's all done. They just hand you the keys.
It's really smart. I mean, my neighbor bought a Volvo 2 days ago, and I kind of watched process.
Yeah. I'll pray for him.
It was from the dealership, though. It was entirely – and I talked to him afterwards. I was like, you know, I saw you get your new car delivered. Like, how did you buy it? And he said it just went online, and he just went through the process. He picked out everything he wanted, and then he just went ahead and just said, okay, this is the car that I want. And he said, I never left my house.
Yeah.
It was just straight delivered to my house. So it is interesting that we're starting, you know, when Carvana first started in these companies that let you buy vehicles online, it was kind of like, come on, who's buying a car online? Now they kind of fell into it because now more people are going to do it. And if you have a car you like, you can buy it. And look, Cadillac, I commend what they're doing here with making it really simple and easy. And I feel like Cadillac is coming back to life here.
Yeah,
and they're starting to really put some juice into it.
They're pushing it. It's going to be up there with Volvo, all these EVs. But the other side of that, when you're talking about that buying everything online, well, part of the dealer's profit and part of the dealer's – I don't know if it's the finance and insurance department. That, you know, after you bought the car, you've already said, okay, I'm buying it. And they go, okay, go see our finance manager. And he helps you up with financing, so the dealer makes money on that. Then they help you with – you know, they want to put the paint protection on there. You want to put these pinstripes. Oh, you want these fancy wheels. How about this security system? That's where they sell you all the upgrades, okay? Kind of like at a restaurant, you know, hey, you want fries with that? Oh, well, okay, that's going to cost you extra. Well, this is where the dealership makes a lot of their money, okay? Because they really don't make much selling the car. They really don't. They make money on service, but they make money on the finance and insurance. Here you are getting your own financing. Okay, or through GM acceptance or whatever, GMAC. Also, you're not going to buy all the upgrades. I mean, for example, the Toyota dealer, the guy I bought my Toyota from, my old Tundra, he paid $195 for locking lug nuts. Okay.
Ouch.
Okay. Well, you can go to their parts department for $29, buy them. Okay?
Yeah.
That's what he paid $195 for. I saw the invoice. And that's where dealers, I hate to say screw people, but that's where they make a lot of their profit.
So, okay, hold on. Can I stop you for a second? Because yeah. I think everyone – let me speak for the layman here.
Yeah.
When you're going through that ridiculously long piece of paper when you're buying a vehicle, right? The thing that like stretches the your whole length of your arm.
Mm-hmm.
How much – can you tell them no? Like, can you say you're charging me $200 for something that should be 20?
Yeah, you can say I went to buy a Ford Expedition, several years ago, and I bought the ad truck. They call it the ad truck. So it was the cheapest thing online. I'll say it. I'll take that one. Well, okay. And I said, he goes, well, it's got the VIN etching on the windows, and that's $495. I said, no, it doesn't. And he goes, yeah, it does. And I went, walk out here, and I said, this is the truck? Yeah. I said, you see it? He goes, well, we haven't put it on yet. I said, well, I don't want it.
Right.
So he kind of him and hawed, okay. And then I just say, I don't want it. I don't want it. And they'll either sell it to you or not. You know what I mean? And so I ended up buying it.
So really,
it
depends on whether or not you have the conviction to sit there and stand your ground.
Do you really want to spend – but there are people out there, and it's a game. They love it. I've got friends that go and they barter and they bicker back and forth for several hours. And I'm just like, my time's worth too much for that. Buying it online, you don't have any of that. It's done.
That's why I'm asking, because if you're financing a vehicle, I know you might say $500 is $500, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're financing a vehicle, it's not $500; it's $500 over the course of the loan.
Yeah,
so you're adding 4% interest onto that $500 over the course of whatever you're doing, 60 months, 72 months, whatever you're doing. So that's what happened when I was getting into our conversation with the Jeep that we financed, that we leased. And I went through a couple different things, and they were the dealership here, and maybe it's because they knew how I was coming in there, but they were super nice. They took off like three things.
Right.
Because I was like, why is that on there? And they're like, oh, that's a standard thing. And I said, well, I don't want that. And they go, okay, and they crossed it off.
Right.
So I wondered, in the back of my mind, I was wondering
most of them will do that, Matt. They're not so bad.
If I didn't point that out, that would have been this or that. And I wasn't financing the vehicle. I was just leasing the vehicle. But, that's the trick, and this is why I think people listen to you, Mike, because that's a huge thing if you can say no. Like you look at something and you go, wait a minute, if I go ahead and go on Amazon or I go on an auto parts website and I look at that and they're selling it for $40, even with labor, you can't charge me $500 for that.
Right.
What are you doing?
You're right.
So
you're right.
It's a tough fight, I think, for people because of the fact that they are inexperienced in the buying process, and it's the little It's not the big price tag, the $25,000 for the vehicle. It's the little price tag.
You know where they get you,
little
Matt?
Things.
One of the ways they get you, people don't think about it at all. After you're done, they have, we have to have a document fee of $300.
Yep.
Okay, that's just to go to the courthouse and say, no, that's okay. I'll get somebody to do it for you. I get somebody who'll do it for $50. Well, okay. So then they'll drop the document fee down to nothing. But that's one of the ways. It's just little things here and there. And I understand they've got to make a living. That some of these vehicles, like they were dealers telling me, you buy a Ford Focus and they make $400 off it, period. That's it.
Yep.
They make more off a truck and things like that. But guys, it's people think that there's all this profit in these vehicles. They're not.
No.
It's all about volume, right?
It's all about turning over volume and getting as many vehicles as you can sell as possible. And that's one reason why – I've told people that when you go on the lot, you got to be careful and you got to be comfortable walking off the lot.
Right.
Because that's the worst thing. That they panic when you walk off the lot. They don't want you to walk off the lot. They need you there to buy it. So that's your best negotiating ploy is, okay, I'm going home.
Yeah.
And see what they do.
But more and more dealers are getting into this is the price. There is no negotiation. It's a fair price. And they're okay. And dealers are getting better.
I would prefer that.
Because they want you to come back.
Yeah.
They want you to come back.
They want you
to come back and get parts and service, and that's where they do make good money, and they do a good job at that stuff. And body shop, you wreck it, bring it to us, and so that is where they're coming their money. So they're not. They've kind of given up on some of the sales. Now there are some dealers out there that are not real ethical, and those are the ones that you want to stay away from.
Right.
But, I still appreciate it. That's what scares me about buying a Tesla, and not having a dealer. It's like going to the Apple store. Some of them are really cool, and some of them are really not. Mm-hmm. I need to go to the Apple store on a Saturday morning and get something, and there's 75 people in line. And so it's going to be that way. But I have some friends one of my friends' wife got a Tesla, and she's had some service problems with it. It's just really tough dealing with the company. They're this is the way it is. If you don't like it, I'm sorry, you know, but I apologize, but this is all we can do. If you had a dealer to be your advocate, that's kind of cool. Because there are times dealers can get stuff covered under warranty that the company wouldn't normally warranty. They're your advocate. And so that's my deal for having a dealer system.
Interesting stuff.
Okay, also, dealers also, you know, they're all the ones that handle you, that sponsor your little league teams and stuff like
that. Yes, yeah. Which, by the way, right now, you know, you've gone to them, you've knocked on their door, you've asked for handouts, not just dealerships, all small business. Yep. Go help your small businesses right now.
Order the iced tea when you go to the restaurant. Order something extra and
help
take
them
care
out.
Of your servers,
because you've asked them to come and sponsor your boys' little league team or your girls' whatever team, and I mean, now is the time to pay them back for their service and their help to keep them. They helped you do what you wanted to do. You helped them keep their lights on.
They're part
of
the community. That's the best part. These company that's in California is not. You know what I mean?
Right. It's a great point. All right. We got our automotive reviews coming up next. And Mike's got a conversation as well with our interview. Lots more to come. Don't move. It's Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
All right, guys, time now for our automotive review. It's Matt Perrault with you. Mike Herzing will be alongside here in just 1 second. He has a Nissan Rogue he's going to tell you about. Let me tell you about the most fun vehicle I have driven in quite a long time, and that is this incredible Volkswagen Golf GTI 2.0, the Autobahn version of this vehicle. So look, it's the highest of high trims, all right? And you have to really like driving to nearly go all the way to $40,000 for a Volkswagen Golf. I mean, this is fully tricked out. It has every bells and whistles you could want on this thing. But my goodness gracious, the Autobahn is just so much fun. I mean, just forget about the fact that you get automatic climate control and leather seats. Forget about the fact that you're getting some very high-tech safety features when you go all the way up to the Autobahn. It's the engine. It's how much fun you have with the six-speed, with just the overall handling. I mean, you can get this thing all the way down, you know, just the base model, under $30,000. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a more fun vehicle for under $30,000. I mean, this is it's a practical car for someone in the city, but it's got the soul, as they say, of a sports car. It's quick. It's fun. Yeah, okay, it's a little bit bumpy. I'm not going to debate that. It's a little bumpy. You are going to feel some of the, you know, potholes, and you're going to feel some of the turns in the road, some of the twists, and some of the things you might not feel with others. But it is a quick and fun, quick, responsive manual transmission with a fast, fast car. I loved this vehicle. I did not want to give it back. You take one look at it, and you're kind of like, okay, it's a Golf. You get behind the wheel, you start moving through the gears, and you realize real quick just how much fun it is to drive, how quick it is, how responsive it is through turns and corners. It just goes. So, you know, you've got the touchscreen on the interior, which I love. Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, just simply automatics, right? You've got your forward collision warning with this Autobahn version. Your automated emergency braking, lane departure warning, and lane keep assist is there. You've got your adaptive cruise control, which is there. I mean, if you are somebody who likes the GTIs, and if you're somebody who likes the thing to move, you like a vehicle that's really quick, I think if I was in the city, okay, if I was living in a big city, if I was in, you know, a Chicago, if I was in a Los Angeles, maybe not LA as much, but a New York, a Philadelphia, a Boston, and parking was a problem, you can park this thing anywhere. I mean, literally anywhere. It's tiny, but it doesn't feel tiny, and it gets insane gas mileage. I was getting 35 miles per gallon, and I drive the thing like it's stolen, okay? I just whip around and have a ton of fun with this, you know, 228 horsepower engine fully juiced up, and it just moves, man. I cannot get over this. And, you know, I went into this car thinking, okay, I'm not going to like this thing at all. And then I kind of got behind the wheel and I was like, okay, this is a little bit of a different type of ride. This is not really what we think of when you think of, like, you know, a Volkswagen Golf. Like, this is not your typical vehicle that you would expect, but take this thing through S-turns. Take this thing, you know, into on the highway. I mean, it is so much fun. And the cargo hold in the back, is insane. I couldn't believe how much space there was back there for a vehicle that looks really small. It's not. It's not by any means. It is spacious. So it's pretty affordable. It's pretty safe. Gets really good gas mileage, and it's a ton of fun to drive. Whether you know you're on a track or off a track, this Volkswagen Golf GTI on the Autobahn 2.0 version, I mean, look, you want to compare it? I would compare it. If you're in the vehicle market for, you know, a compact car and you like to drive, it's been on everyone's, you know, best top 10 list, best buy list. There's a reason for it. I was dramatically shocked at this vehicle. Definitely take a test drive to see what I'm talking about with the Volkswagen, the 2020 Volkswagen Golf GTI, all the way up to the Autobahn trim level, which is what I had. All right, Mike, what were you driving this week?
Folks, this week I was driving the 2021 Nissan Rogue. Now, this is a five-passenger, two-row, midsize CUV. This is Nissan's biggest seller in the biggest segment in the industry, okay? These things are selling like crazy. What Nissan's done, they've gone and redesigned it. All new platform, all kinds of new features. They've got to add a lot of goodies. This is a young family vehicle, okay? This is really designed to meet all these needs. And, of course, as an older person, I like it, too. It's really nice. It's got a neat-looking design. It's got better looking than ever. And it's always been a little bit expressive, okay, is what they call it. I just think it's pretty cool looking. And mine was this really burnt orange looking, great looking car. I had a couple people say, that's a really good looking car. What they've done is Nissan has something called Safety Shield 360. And they made it standard across the entire lineup, which is really cool. Automatic emergency braking with pedestrian detection, blind spot warning, rear cross traffic alert, lane departure warning, high beam assist, rear automatic braking. All these things, okay? They've got 10 airbags. It's got crumple zones. It's got, this is the safety thing that people are going to want, all right? But they've added a lot of stuff. Now, the one I had was the pretty loaded one. It's the SV Premium, all right? Now, first of all, it comes, this thing, you can get this down to $25,000. Sticker. You can get better than that. You can load it up to where it's around $36,000. I mean, that's got everything you want. But the one I had was the blind spot intervention. So if you're backing up, not only does it tell you, it stops you. Traffic sign recognition, intelligent cruise control. But the ProPilot thing works great. I mean, you can let go of the wheel for a second and it will keep you right in the middle of the lane. It doesn't weave from one side to the other like you're somebody's think you're drunk or something. This one really works. About the two best ones in the market that I know of is Super Cruise from Cadillac and GM, and this one, ProPilot Assist, really are really neat. The design of this vehicle is like a family hub, okay? It's real simple to reach from the front row to the second row. It's got lots of room in the back. It's a lot of storage things. You can go to touch the button. You go to unlock the doors. Walk up to the vehicle, just touch the door, and it unlocks the whole vehicle, okay? You can do that on any of the doors, not just the fronts, okay? That's really kind of neat. The doors open extra wide, easier to get in, you know, child seats or something. Or if you're an old fart like me, it's kind of easier to get in and out. It's just really designed with a lot. It's got remote start. It's got intelligent climate control. You can actually heat it up before you put somebody in the vehicle, like a child or something, when it's really cold or really hot outside. It's got these zero gravity, low fatigue seats. They came out with these several years ago, and we're like, zero gravity, NASA designed. Come on, man. Is it really? It really is great. I've driven to Dallas in one of these vehicles, and I get out, and I don't feel tired. It's really, they work. They've got all kinds of little cubby holes, and it's got divide and hide system, and it's got secure storage for the stuff that you really don't want to get anybody to see it. And it's got a lot of goodies that the center console is really neat. It's got a little space underneath it, stuff like that. It's just neat. It's got wireless charging for the smartphone. It's got all kinds of power plugs and things like that. Everything you would want. You can get a 12.3-inch digital dashboard, gauge cluster and all that stuff. It's a 10.8-inch heads-up display. Okay. I don't think anybody in that market has that. It's just got a lot of neat things. Nissan's worked really hard, and they're trying to keep ahead of everybody.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzig.
Folks, as we talked about earlier in the show, I've got our friends from Speedway Motors getting ready to call because we are going to talk about our classic car segment and some of the things I'm getting ready to do on my 58 F100 project. Tell you what, these guys are great. I have Zach Raddick, actually, from our friends at Speedway Motors on the phone right now. Zach, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Now, it's so hard to do when you're doing a classic car or an off-road vehicle or a hot rod. I've found that it's so hard to find the right parts and also the right quality of parts. There are people that go to eBay, they go Google this or Google that, and you ended up trying to put something together that all the parts don't match or they don't mesh. You know what I mean? And I found that you guys have people to talk to about that. So tell us about what you guys have done to maybe streamline this this operation.
Yeah. At Speedway Motors, I mean, we've been doing this since 1952, so I guess you could say that we kind of grew up with this whole industry, you know, as hot rodding and street rodding was really becoming popular. But at Speedway, something that we really take a lot of pride in is the fact that we've got guys on the phone, you know, every day during the week from 8 to 5 that really are here to help our customers select parts. You know, we can talk about different options. You know, many times there are more than one option that you can go with on a classic vehicle like this.
Sure.
You know, and then we can talk through the pros and cons of doing different things, you know, doing aftermarket modifications. I mean, there's always a lot of gray area with that. So we have a large staff of guys with years and years of experience doing stuff like this that can either, you know, make some recommendations on factory replacement parts or if you want performance improvements, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, we can help customers talk through that and help them make an informed buying decision.
Well, you know, on classic cars, it's do I want just like a daily driver, something I can just drive, you know, across town to go do something, or do I want something that's just going to be the show it shows, something like at SEMA or something like that? But you guys have not that type of setup, and you got this help for people that want to do off-roading, because there's people that just want to maybe they have a Jeep Wrangler, they want to raise it a little bit, maybe put bigger wheels and tires, but they don't know where to go or what to go. And the worst part is some of the parts you get are just terribly cheap, and that's a safety item. And there's a lot of people that email me when I talk about this kind of stuff. I get tons of emails, people going, where do we go and get a quality part, and they all fit. And that would sounds like you guys.
Yeah, there's kind of three big markets that we focus on. I mean, the street rod stuff all the way from the 20s till the 50s. We really focus on muscle cars and classic trucks as well. And then circle track racing is another area of focus for us. And, you know, quality is always a big thing, especially with performance parts. I mean, if you're going to have a dirt track race car and you're going to go to the track with it on Friday night, you certainly are not going to be happy with a broken car that can't finish the race.
Right.
I mean, it's all about quality. It's all about, you know, going over the finish line, whether that's to the car show or at the racetrack.
You know, you're exactly right. And like, for example, I was going to on my F100, it has points, ignition points. I want to replace that. Right. I want to put on something that's I don't have to adjust and things like that. All right, cool. Some of these places have three or four different ways to go. Even you guys have three different ways for me to go. So I need to call your folks and say, this is what I'm trying to achieve. How do I get there the most economically and the best quality way, right?
Right. Yeah, there's always lots of options for stuff like that. You know, usually the more mainstream the vehicle, the more options you have. And Ford, you know, when it comes to street rod and muscle cars, is right there at the top. You know, there's going to be a lot of options for a pickup like that. So kind of when you're deciding what kind of ignition system you want, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand with what do you want it to look like? Is this something that you want to remain, you know, a factory appearance? Or is this something that you want, you know, the best that you can get, a billet distributor, you know, with electronic ignition and an ignition box? I mean, is it something that you've got a good ignition system that works? You just don't want to have points in there anymore.
Right.
So it really kind of depends on what your goals are for it, and that's what we like to do on the phone. When you give us a call, we'll ask you a few questions and really try to get on the same page with you and find out what goals you have and what you want to achieve with the project.
you know, when I was looking for this vehicle, I had the, you know, we talked about it on the show for weeks about what I was looking for and some of the vehicles that really kind of disappointed me and things like that. But something to tell you, the prices are crazy is the late 70s to even the late 80s pickup trucks. Dodge, the GMC, the Chevrolet, the Ford, they're crazy priced. Everybody wants to fix these.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're a popular choice because they're good-looking pickups. I mean, a lot of us grew up with them. You know, that's kind of the curse probably with you and I is we remember when you could pick up one of those trucks for $1,000 or something like that. And it's just not the case anymore. They're too popular.
You know, they are. And the best part is that, you know, they have air conditioning. They have power brakes. They have power steering. You can take them. I could take them. You know, I can go from Houston to Dallas. You can go on a 200-mile trip on it. Yeah, it gets crummy fuel economy. But they're relatively reliable and things like that versus the early 70s or even the 60s or 50s. You don't really have that option without a lot of work.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are trying to do with their street-rotted pickups is kind of emulate something from the 70s or 80s, you know, like your 58 Ford pickup.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that it rides like a 58 Ford pickup. So there's a lot of suspension upgrades that you can do. I mean, convert the thing to having electronic ignition and get rid of the generator, get rid of the carburetor. There's all kinds of upgrades that you can make to make it more like something from the 70s or the 80s.
A little bit more user-friendly?
Absolutely.
Well, a lot of people want to work on these because they're easier to work on.
Right.
You know, and that's a big deal for especially the weekend warrior, the guy that just wants to do this. But he also doesn't know where to go get parts. It's not like the days that I could go to a hot rod shop across town. Those guys are pretty much gone. But I've remembered Speedway Motors in the racing world forever. I mean, and you guys are around, but you've really moved into just – you guys sell just about everything for everybody, it seems like.
Yeah, there's a lot of different variety that we've got these days, and we've got a whole team of guys that are actively looking to expand our product line every day.
Yeah, I know that, but and that must be the hardest thing because there's so many really cheapy parts out there. I've had a guy that did a lift kit on a Jeep, and the big U-bolts that hold that, you know, he put the blocks and things like that for these big U-bolts, and he goes to tighten them off, and they snap off. Okay, and I'm like. And he looked at it, and it was some overseas, and it was the cheapest stuff you could get. But he bought it on eBay, and they'll give him another part, another bolt. But it's going to take 2 weeks to get it, and then I don't know if I'd trust it anyway. And you guys, how do you guys vet some people like that?
You know, it's just one of those things that our quality control department spends a lot of time looking at things and deciding what products we want to offer. I mean, we've got an in-house engineering team that definitely plays a big role in our product development and making sure that things are up to spec. You know, it's one of those things that a lot of things happen behind the scenes that customers may never know that we do, but we've got almost 500 employees and only about, you know, 20 of us are the ones that are on the phone that our customers get to know. So there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes that we're doing to ensure that our customers have a good experience all the way around.
Okay. Now, where are you guys located?
We've actually got two facilities now. We're in Lincoln, Nebraska. That's where Speedy Bill started the business back in 1952.
I love that name.
You know, he grew up here in Lincoln and, you know, never wanted to move the business and wanted to make it right here in his hometown. And then actually, about 2 years ago, we acquired a warehouse down in Phoenix. So we do have a retail store and a warehouse and a small call center down there in Phoenix, Arizona now.
Wow. So you guys have, let's say, you have hot rod parts, you have classic vehicle parts, you have off-road parts. About what are your biggest sellers and what are your biggest brands? Is it Jeep for the off-road stuff?
You know, a lot of the off-road stuff is not really something that's brand specific. I mean, you know, being in circle track racing, we have a lot of suspension parts, Heim joints and swedge tubes and different things like that. We really are not focused on the off-road market as much as it might seem like that we are. But a lot of guys find their way to Speedway just because we have the universal parts that they need to fabricate their whatever it may be, their off-road buggy or, you know, a modified Jeep. you know, that really doesn't resemble a factory Jeep anymore.
Yeah.
But biggest sellers for us are still street rods. I mean, that's what we started out selling parts for, and, you know, it's definitely our bread and butter all the way.
Wow, that is really cool, because I just looking through your – I could look through your website / catalog all day. I mean, it's like, ooh, yeah, look at this. Ooh, look at this. Ooh. You know, I could think my total net worth could be right there used in your catalog. I mean, it just – okay, this is my year's salary right here, because you got so much cool stuff. And the fact that I can call you and say, this is what I'm trying to achieve. I want to do this. I'm a regular driver. And as a matter of fact, I may do that and then get you guys to help me work on this thing and just kind of do a few things to this truck and follow it on the website and also on, you know, on the show. But it's so nice to be able to call somebody that knows about these parts and this is what I want to achieve. No, you really don't need this one. You ought to get this one. Even though it might be cheaper, that may be the way you want to go. And so I like that fact.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what we're all about is making sure that our customers enjoy what they're doing, because that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody bought a classic vehicle just because that's all they had their option. You know, that's not the only option that there was. Excuse me. They bought a classic vehicle because they wanted to enjoy it. And it's the whole thing. You know, it's driving the vehicle. It's going to an event, a Cars and Coffee, showing up at the drive-in on Friday night to see their friends, having fun wrenching on it in the garage. I mean, that's almost half the fun right there.
Yeah.
You know, getting your tools dirty and working on your vehicle.
Yep. Yeah. Same thing with me. I tell you what. Now, what's your website? Is it speedwaymotors.com?
Yeah, www.speedwaymotors.com.
Okay. And we can look on there and find all the parts we need. Zach, thanks for joining Let's Talk Wheels today.
Yeah, no problem at all.
That was Zach Raddatz from our friends at Speedway Motors. So, all right, folks, hang on, because there's more to come, including our weekly podcast segment with Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com, all of it right here on the Let's Talk Wheels radio network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels radio network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
It's Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation that Mike just had. Super. So explain a little bit more as to what they do, Mike. What do those people do?
This company, Speedway Motors, has been around since 1952, back when I was born. And it started with circle track racing, but now they sell all kinds of parts for classic cars, hot rods, okay. Off-road stuff, stuff like that. If you want a little performance, or you want to keep your vehicle totally stocked, let's say you got, like Matt, you went out and buy an 85 Chevy pickup or something, which is something that your age you're going crazy for. You want to make it look stock, but that maybe run a bit better. Yeah.
Yep.
They've got fuel injection. Say you have something from the late 70s, and with a carburetor, they've got a fuel injection system that if you look at it, it looks like it's a carburetor, but it's really fuel injection. It runs better thing, and it's not much more than a carburetor, and they'll last forever. So there's a lot of neat things. But the trick is there's so many cheap – I hate to say Chinese, but there's some cheap knockoffs from across the world here that the parts just fall apart. And so these guys go and they vet all these vendors for you, and you can get good quality parts, and the prices are good. It's great to have somebody you can go to and talk to them and say, this is what I'm trying to do. And they'll recommend good, better, and best parts. It's really cool.
So real quick before we get out of here, we didn't get to this story in the news notes segment, but if you have a GM vehicle right now, the Takata airbag inflators, they have now recalled 5.9 million more of them.
Right.
Which is sort of interesting, because we thought that they had it down, and now it's to 2007 to 2014 trucks and SUVs with GM. Right. That's quite a bit,
but
Mike.
They've done 63 million of these things. They've recalled that many worldwide, and actually 100 million inflators. And by 19 different companies, okay. But here's the trick: is they still got 11 million here in the U.S. that haven't been fixed yet.
So now it's 17 million.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of vehicles need to be replaced with.
Yeah, and the trick is, if you're where you're at, where there's not much humidity, but actually high heat, humidity, things like that, like here the Gulf Coast and all that, those airbags deteriorate more. Those inflators. What happens is when the airbag goes off, the inflators, the shrapnel goes into your chest. Which is ugly. And there have been a lot of deaths, 15 deaths here in the country. And most of them, in Honda, actually 15 in Honda, and then a couple of them in Ford vehicles and one in a BMW since 2009. They've been doing this since about 2012 or 14. I mean, it's ugly, man. It's just, but this is, they're fixing it. They're fixing it. So there you go.
Wow. That's good that they're fixing it.
63 million cars.
It's, I mean, just when you hear, I mean, it's rare, okay? It's a defect, but it is rare. But yeah, when you hear about a rupturing and, you know, an airbag fire is supposed to be saving your life during a car crash, and instead it ruptures, sending metal fragments flying around.
Yep.
Not what you want to hear.
Costing GM $1.2 billion, and Takata filed bankruptcy, so, you know.
Yeah, that's not good. So check that out. If you have a GM, we're talking about, you know, the Cadillac Escalade, the Chevy Silverado, the Chevy Suburban, the Tahoe, the Sierra, the GMC Yukon. They were built over this eight-year period that they're adding onto this list. So, all right, guys, make sure you check out the podcast. Mike has a long conversation every week with our friends at Classic.com during Barabom. You guys get it every week just on the podcast, exclusively on the podcast. Go and search Let's Talk Wheels where you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, all the good stuff. Or you can just go to sportsmapradio.com, click on podcasts, and you'll scroll down to see Let's Talk Wheels as well. So you got it there every single week for those conversations. And check us out on Instagram and Facebook as well by going and searching Let's Talk Wheels. You can see pictures and stories and all sorts of fun stuff.
That's right.
Coming up. Mike, I appreciate your time, my friend.
See you next week, buddy.
Next week, same place, same time for Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
Welcome, everybody, to the Let's Talk Wheels podcast. This is our classic car segment, as usual. We have our resident car guru, Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com, right there on the line. Jeremy, how's everything been in L.A. this week?
Very good. Just enjoying the sunshine from, you know, just moving down here from San Francisco. I'm not over it yet.
You're not over having sunshine. It's pretty nice. And having to eat outside and stuff. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm mostly just eating at home.
All right, so let's jump right into it. I got a bunch of emails about this, but there's an article in one and all over the country this week about a guy in Florida that bought a 1982 Corvette, and he got it from a company called Gateway Motors, and they've been around. They're all over the place. They sold a vehicle for me. They were nice folks. And it supposedly had, 44,000 miles on it, and he buys it, and he finds out later on that the speedometer has rolled over, because evidently those are the days when it didn't have million-mile speedometers, okay? So it rolls over. And then he's trying to sue and get the attorney general from Florida involved and things like that. What do you think about that?
It's a really interesting situation. It's really hard to tell on these old cars if they have or haven't rolled over. It's kind of buyer beware, but at the same time, how special of a car was this? Is it really that worth it if it had 44,000 miles or 144,000 miles? There's no way to really tell.
Right. No, actually, a pre-purchase inspection would have said, you know, this thing's got so-and-so wear. This is where, the doors, you know, the hinges and things like that. I don't know that it's got 44,000. I think it's got more than that. Wouldn't a guy that was – or a person that knew vehicles be able to look at it and go, this has got more miles?
Maybe someone that's knowledgeable, but if the car was ever restored in its life, they kept that speedometer, they kept that motor, and they just rebuilt it.
Right.
Maybe not. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
It depends on the condition, if they're touting it as, you know, original paint. And even then, it's really hard to tell. It could have been repainted in the 90s, and it's going to look the same if it sits out in the sun or it's been driven a lot. 44,000 miles is not low mileage, you know, for a car out in the sun all the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're right. And, you know, but I would, if it was me, oh, actually, I bought mine. I bought this 58 F100 that we talked about, we've been talking about, and it shows 87,000 miles. I actually bought it online, and they just said its speedometer shows 87,000 miles. We're not sure on the mileage. And that's okay. It's obviously been restored at some point because all the hinges are good. The paint has been repainted, probably repainted 6 or 8 or 10 years ago. It's got little scratches here and there, one little ding. But other than that, it's in really a bright red. The interior is really nice. So I could look at it and say, yeah, maybe it has 87,000 miles. But honestly, in my heart, it didn't matter. Okay, as long as I'm getting what I'm getting and I'm happy with my purchase, that's okay. Now, maybe this guy's got found more problems with the vehicle than he thought it should have at 87,000 miles. Maybe he just wants to cause a big stink. To me, if I got a pretty good deal on it, I would still be okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, there's buyer's remorse, or like you said, you find something or it ends up being more problems and you chase it down and you realize it. You know, unless these cars come with, you know, a big book of receipts or a really good history of ownership, it's really hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah, that's what you need somebody to really look at. And also, maybe, I don't know if he bought it all, I guess he bought it online. And, you know, these guys, they inspect their vehicles. That's the deal. So I can tell you, when I took my vehicle for them to sell, they inspected it. Okay, they did a basically, because they didn't want to put it on their showroom or put and start advertising it without finding out what they really were selling. Okay, and so they knew the vehicle inside and out. So I'm sure that they did it there too. And I think that maybe the guy's just, you know, I know maybe his, like I said, maybe a little buyer's remorse. Maybe he paid extra for it because it was only low mileage. Now, that's different if you got someone that said, okay, it's only got 44,000 miles on it, so I'm going to charge you way over what normally they would sell for. I don't know the whole story about what the price he paid.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you see these cars that are all original interior, but low mileage, but they're not kept in the best condition,
right.
And it's hard to tell. It's really hard to tell. Nowadays, you know, there's Carfax on these newer cars, and you sometimes see them on older cars. But for the most part, people aren't taking them to the garages that are normally, not saying that these garages are hiding it from Carfax,
no.
But a garage that works on cars in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s isn't really a garage that's reporting things to Carfax, because that's not done.
Right. Last time I checked, maybe not that people can update me, but they got to pay to get stuff on Carfax. Okay, in most cases, just like you got to pay for a Carfax. So if I'm a shop, I'm not going to bother to put it on Carfax. Are you kidding me? Now, when it just like if it's a body shop, they don't put it on Carfax. But if an insurance pays for it, the insurance companies will put it on Carfax because that's what they want. Okay, but be honest with you, people think that that's a big deal. And if it's an almost new car that's usually where it's covered by full coverage insurance and anything happens to it, it'll get fixed by the insurance company. That's interesting. So it's good to have a Carfax for that. But just any other way, I don't think it's a big deal.
No, I agree with you. On these older cars, you know, the mileage shouldn't be as important as it is to some people.
Right.
In terms of the deal they're getting, I think a car that's got low mileage and sits isn't always the best car if you want to drive it. You know, these cars aren't meant to sit, and they're meant to be driven. And I think that mileage shouldn't matter. You're looking at the condition and the way the car runs and drives, and if you're buying it as, you know, original, it has the original motor, the original parts. But I don't really care if it's been rolled over, as long as the car in my mind is what I want it to be.
You know, you're right. I mean, back then in the 80s, you know, the motor, if it had 100,000 miles on it, that wasn't the end of the world. But it may need a transmission service. I mean, it may have transmission replacement soon. It might need some engine work, the seals and gaskets and all that stuff. But odds are, being 38 years old, it's had all that done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no way that if it's rolled over, that it's gone through its whole life without any service work or anything like that being done. In my mind, you know, it's had great work, because these cars aren't built like cars today where they're going to go 200,000-300,000 miles without having to crack them open and do something.
You know, you're absolutely right. And to me, it's just, I would always buy a vehicle. I mean, whether this was the vehicle I bought was 100,000, 160, 187,000 or 87,000, I bought it for the vehicle that it was. The mileage was not, I'd say it was pretty irrelevant to me. And that was because I saw the vehicle, I knew what I was getting, and I planned to put seals in it and probably go through the engine and things like that anyway. So it wasn't big of a deal. And some of these people just need to understand, you're buying a classic car. It's not like you're buying a car off the used car lot somewhere. That is, you know, 10 years old and they cheated on the mileage. It isn't like that at all. Back then, they all rolled over.
Yeah, and I always say, you know, it doesn't matter if you live in New York and the car's in California and you're really interested, you got to get a video of it. You got to talk to the owner. You got to even send somebody out, put some eyes on it, because all those things are important so that when you get it, you're happy.
Okay, yeah, because like your site, you're doing things now with pre-purchase inspections. When they put your vehicle on your auction, it has pre-purchase inspections. It's got a video. It's got, you know, 50 or 75 or 100 pictures. And
yeah,
there's
making
things.
Sure we're kind of – I'm sorry to cut you off. We're making sure we're kind of vetting the cars before we list them. You know, it's not just like you can pay and put them up on the site. So we're making sure everything has high-quality photos, at least one or two videos of the car. We're getting someone to go out and do an inspection of all these cars, give their honest opinion, what they see, and it's, you know, unbiased. They're not working for us. They're not working for the owner of the car. They're going out on their own time to check it out and give a report back.
Well, that's a big deal. All right, so you're working on your 40 Mercury?
Yeah, every day.
What are you doing to it?
I cut the roof 4 inches. When I bought it, it already had airbags. So it's going to have air suspension, lay pretty close to the ground. I'm still doing a lot of metal work and fabrication and just trying to figure out where everything goes. I know I told you recently I was waiting on some door seals, which took a long while, but I needed them so that we could line up the doors and make sure that everything is flush before we finish all the body work.
Man, that's the fact that you can do all that is amazing, and I think it's great. Now, what drivetrain are you going to put in it?
Well, you know, I don't do it all myself. I have some friends that are helping me out. Right now we have a 383 motor. I don't have a transmission for it yet, so I'm kind of on the hunt.
We think about a manual or automatic?
You know what? I think in the seating position that you're in, manual transmission might be a little bit tough, but it's not out of the scope of possibility.
Well, I know that you're a pretty tall guy. If you had to cut the roof a little bit, it must be – have you measured yourself sitting in the seat?
Yeah, you know, these cars are pretty long. I'm not too concerned about the back seat, so it should be okay.
All right, Jeremy, let's check next week. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and we got a lot of stuff going on next week. We're gonna continue this story and talk a little bit more about our project. So have a good one, buddy.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in to the podcast today. If you have any car questions, be sure to email me, info@letstalkwheels.com. We're going to work to get everybody an answer. If we get Jeremy involved, we're going to get a good answer, that's for sure. And remember, you can find us on our website, letstalkwheels.com, on Facebook, on Instagram. Please tell your friends about the podcast, and please ask them to subscribe. We'd really appreciate it. So on behalf of Matt Perrault, Jeremy Barenbaum, our awesome producer, Jack McCraw, and myself, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Let's Talk Wheels radio podcast. As always, I'm Mike Herzing. Happy motoring.